Godzilla is now in New York City.
Monster 01 and 02, commence the attack.
Start this episode off with an apology. We missed last week. It's on me. I'll take the fall for that.
You suck, Aaron. Sorry, that's rude.
I'll take the blame. That was all my fault.
It happens.
But you know, it happens. We're gonna make a goal to try not to miss too many weeks on this podcast. But I have went ahead, updated the schedule for Stomp This Way, which is the podcast you're listening to, and
no way,
pushed everything back a week, rearranged a few things. For instance, we were gonna watch The Mysterians after our next Godzilla film. Since I ordered Pulgasari from Amazon and got it in the mail the other day, I've wanted to watch it, and I wanted my first time to watch it to be the first time that we reviewed it, or the only time we're going to review it.
Thank God.
So, and I thought it would be a nice double bill with the host, since we watched a movie from South Korea. We're about to review a movie from South Korea. We can kind of pair it with a movie from North Korea, and so we'll watch that instead of The Mysterians, and I pushed The Mysterians back a few weeks.
That's okay. But
anyway.
So this is definitely the worst movie we've watched on this podcast yet.
I think he's being sarcastic.
Being sarcastic. It's probably one of the best movies we've watched so far.
We're going to review The Host.
If not the best.
Well, we can argue it at the end. It is the best. Not the Stephanie Meyer adapted film.
Thank God.
The Host. But the 2006 Korean monster film.
The Host.
Kind of an odd name. Doesn't really make sense. I guess it kind of makes sense. But the original Korean title was just Monster.
Translated to English, obviously.
Translated to language, yeah. It was the Korean word for monster, which makes a lot more sense than The Host, because there's not really, I guess, the American government makes up, like, some story about him being the host of a virus that's non-existent or something.
Yeah.
But let's talk about where this movie comes from.
Korea.
Yes, this is true. So this was director Bong Joon-ho's These are Korean names. I'm even less used to Korean names than I am Japanese names, so we're going to butcher.
Both of us.
Butcher some Korean names today, so I want to apologize. But this was director, I believe his name is Bong Joon-ho, so we're going to go with his third feature film. His previous, Memories of Murder, was a very critically acclaimed film that won a lot of awards. So because of that, he was able to demand an $11 million budget, which for a Korean film apparently is a very, very large budget.
Translated to 11 million US.
Translated to 11 million, yes. Actually, it's like 11 billion one. I don't know what they use.
Something like that.
Ones, something. No, that's Japanese. Korean. That's Chinese. You know, really. Whatever their currency is. It starts with a W, I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
Anyway, some interesting tidbits. Some of the scenes were actually filmed in the sewers around the Han River.
Interesting.
During the winter, they would have to the water would freeze, and the crew would have to go in before they would go in and film and melt the water for the scene so they could film it. And then in the summer, when it was warm, like, the water would evaporate, and all the silt and stuff in the sewers would, like, turn into dust and blow around in the cast and crew's faces. Apparently, it was very uncomfortable. So, some great working conditions, apparently. The CGI was primarily done by one company called The Orphanage, which has worked on several Hollywood blockbusters, but is now closed.
We know why.
Well, no, I'm not going to blame it on them, because my point in including that fact was, these Hollywood mega blockbusters that we see, if you set through the credits, there's usually, like, at the very least, five or six different studios. that do the CGI for these movies. But for this one, they really have one primary studio doing all the CGI, which just kind of goes to show you the difference between how foreign films have to do their visual effects versus how these mega-budget Hollywood films have to do their effects. But anyway, this film is in part inspired by a real case in which a U.S. mortician working in Seoul reported that he was ordered to dump large amounts of formaldehyde down the drain, which is exactly what happens at the beginning of this movie. And just kind of funny, the film was praised by North Korean authorities because of its perceived anti-American themes.
Congratulations, North Korea.
So, anyway.
Can they even listen to this podcast in North Korea?
No. Probably not.
I hope not.
So, some box office. This movie was released in 2006. Budget of translated into American dollars, $11 million. Globally, it made approximately $89 million. It was the highest grossing South Korean film at the time. It won Best Film at the Asian Film Awards and won Best Film at the Blue Dragon Film Awards. It's certified fresh at 93% Rotten Tomatoes right now. Quentin Tarantino listed it as one of his top 20 films released since 1992.
Not that Quentin Tarantino's opinion matters to Aaron all that much.
No, I don't really care for Quentin Tarantino, but apparently a lot of people do. And when Empire did their 100 Best Films of World Cinema, they ranked this movie number 81. So
no. I value Quentin Tarantino's opinion. I like his movies.
1992 is the year that Quentin Tarantino started directing movies. That's why he did that.
If I'm not mistaken, that's the year Reservoir Dogs came out.
That's interesting, I guess. I don't really know. But anyway.
You know what? No one asked your opinions over there, Aaron.
Nobody asked my opinions about Quentin Tarantino. Although I did like his movie this year, not going to lie. But anyway. Let's listen to a trailer of this film, and then we'll come back, and I will get right on butchering some names, and then Dylan will read a plot summary.
Where I will also butcher some names.
And then we'll get right into our thoughts of The Host.
Where we might butcher some names.
Alright, see you in a bit.
Mr. Kim.
Formaldehyde. Dirty formaldehyde. Pour him into the sink.
Still alive.
Why didn't you contact the police or the military, a human rights organization, something?
Alright, we're back. Let's get in with this cast and crew again.
What does Park mean at the beginning of someone's name?
That's their last name. That's their family name.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So anyway, this movie was directed by Bong Joon-ho, written by Bak Chul-han and Bong Joon-ho, music by Lee Byung-woo, and effects by, obviously I said, the studio, The Orphanage, and then Chin Wei Chin was in charge of creature design. And then starring,
good luck,
Song Kang-ho, Byun Hee-bong, Park Hae-il, Bae Dok-na, Go Ah-sung, Lee Jae-ung, Lee Dong-ho, Scott Wilson, Paul Laser.
I believe that's Lazar.
Paul Lazar. And Odal Su as the voice of Guomo.
Guomo. That's what we're calling it, Guomo.
That's what it's called in IMDb or whatever. So, anyway. Tell me about the plot.
Let me butcher some names as well. When toxic chemicals are dumped into the Han River, it causes a fish to mutate into Guomo, a terrifying monster that eats anyone that crosses its path. When the creature grabs Hunsio, I believe is how they pronounce it in the movie, one day by the river, it is up to her father, Gong Du, her grandfather, He Bong, her aunt, Nam Ju, and her uncle, Nam Il, to rescue her. The family escapes from a government containment facility and commences searching the sewers for the young girl. After a series of misadventures, the family finally comes in contact with the creature, but the grandfather is killed and the family is separated. Meanwhile, Hunsio has been trying desperately to escape the sewer the creature has dropped her in. She is soon joined by Siju, a young homeless boy whose older brother was killed by the creature. Together they try one last desperate attempt to escape, but they are both swallowed by the creature. Her family finds their way back together, and in a final showdown by the Han River, they pull Hunsio and Siju out of the creature's mouth before killing it. Hunsio died using her body as a shield for Siju, so in the final scene, we see that Gong Du has adopted the boy as credits roll.
Okay, so talking about the plot of this movie, as Dylan said, I mean, this is one of the best movies we've watched. I mean, it's a really well-written film overall, I'd say. You know, we have... Yeah. There are a bunch of characters. There are... how many family members go looking for the girl? There's four.
Four.
Each one has their own individual personality. They all have their own individual character arc, I believe. At least some sort of character arc. They all have their own background that you learn throughout the film. And they all accomplish something different and important in the film. Like, you know, the father, he's an idiot.
He's a little slow. He's
a little slow.
Mistreated as a child.
His daughter is embarrassed. You know, he was hungry because his father was trying really hard to make it and didn't get enough protein or whatever is what they say.
Which caused him to have a learning disability.
Yeah, so... But his character arc is, I guess, you know, learn to not be so useless and to, you know, learn how to be a man and go look for his daughter. The aunt, you see her.
She is an Olympic athlete.
She's an Olympic archer. And you see towards the beginning of the movie is that she chokes in the big moments and she can't.
So obviously, I mean, you know, if she's got a bow and arrow, those skills got to come into play at the end of the movie, right?
So she learns at the end of the movie that she doesn't choke at the big moment. She kills the creature at the end of the movie with her arrow. The brother is an alcoholic at the beginning of the movie. And I guess he learns not to be an alcoholic, I guess. I don't really know. You know, they set a lot of things up that come back to play later in the movie. Like, I mean, it's just good writing that you don't see a lot in these movies. Like, they set up that the uncle was a student. He went to college and like the rest of them. But he was like a student protester or whatever. And that comes back because he knows how to make Molotov cocktails at the end of the movie. And he also knows someone that's smart and knows how to like track the cell phone or something, you know, and... Fact, like we said, the daughter is an archer that comes back at the end. The cell phone they introduced early in the movie, that comes back again when the daughter tries to call him, and that's how they track her later. So, you know, really solid writing. I think this movie is a family drama first and a monster movie second.
Yeah, and it's kind of a comedy at the same time, too.
It's a dark, I'd say it's a dark comedy.
Yeah, a dark comedy at the same time.
And I think they pull off all the elements really well. I think the family stuff is touching. I think the comedy is pretty funny, a lot of it. And I think the action and the drama is really good, too. Yeah.
I enjoyed the story quite a bit. I think all these characters are actually really fleshed out for some of these foreign movies we've watched, where most of the characters usually aren't. They're kind of pointless.
Yeah.
But it's nice to see a good, like, character-focused movie, because we definitely haven't seen that yet.
I wouldn't say we haven't seen it yet. We've seen it a couple times, but... This would probably not be as well
executed as
this one. I'd say, the first Godzilla movie, I know Dylan probably wouldn't quite agree. I think it had pretty good characters. I can't think of another good example right now. But
exactly.
Godzilla King of the Monsters 2019. No, I'm just kidding. Obviously not. Dylan's leaving.
Anyway.
I mean, there are some logic holes. Like, why does the creature digest some people?
But not all of them.
Because at one point it like vomits up a bunch of human remains, like skeletal human remains.
And you're like,
why didn't you eat everybody?
Are you saving these people for snacks?
I guess you could say he's storing them for winter.
They're snacks. Snacks for later.
Snacks for later, I guess. Oh, another logic hole, like, that the brother, you know, later he goes to, like, he knows this office worker that apparently works for a telecommunications company, and he goes in, and it just so happens that the whoever was working at that computer had their password, like, on a sticky note right there. I'm pretty sure, like, that's against every office protocol ever. I mean, just a couple of logic flaws here and there. But overall, I can forgive him because of how well written the characters and the story was. I will say, no, I'll talk about that in the effects section, I guess. But I had a lot of fun. You know, I had a lot of fun with this movie.
Yeah, it's actually pretty good.
I think even Dylan kind of liked it. But anyway.
It's nice to see good characters in a movie.
It is nice to see good characters.
Well-written characters,
obviously.
Well-rounded stories for all of them.
Well-rounded stories. It's mostly. Nice. you might not get that for a while. No. Obviously, we're going to get it now. But no, we got anything else to add to the story while we're talking about it?
No, we can move on to creature design if you want.
We can move on to creature design.
Creature design. So there's one creature.
There is one creature.
Guomul.
Guomul thing.
Guomul.
Guomul. Guomul.
So the design, sticking strictly to the design and not the execution of the effects.
Okay, if you've seen Stranger Things, it looks like a Demogorgon and a tadpole had a baby.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. And I'm not even really sure what it is. Like, is it like a bunch of mutated fish combined together? Because there's like one point where like a couple of dead fish like come off of it. Or is it just one creature that got mutated? Or, I don't really know. I mean, but I kind of liked the design, you know. It's like weird, it's unnatural, it's kind of creepy.
Like I said, it looks like a Demogorgon and a tadpole had a baby.
It's got this tail that grab that it uses to grab people with. Its mouth is kind of creepy that it, you know, eats people with.
I like the design.
I think the creature design is pretty cool. I like how it kind of like swings from the bottom of the bridge and stuff.
Yeah, it like it's like how it gets around, like loops on the bottom of the bridge and like swings around.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Pretty cool.
But let's jump into the effects.
So let's say, starting off right off the bat, the effects on the creature are, they're a little questionable, but I mean, I guess for an $11 million budget, basically one company doing the effects on it, and it being 2006 Korea, it's not as bad as it could be.
I've seen worse.
It's about on par with probably the CGI of that robot in Replicas at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, I don't know if that's what you want to be compared to.
It might be better than that.
Yeah, I agree with what you said. I mean, I'm a lot more forgiving with effects than you are usually. I'll say the one thing that I think you could say hurts them, I guess I kind of applaud them for their bravery. They show the creature.
They show it in daylight a lot.
And they show it in broad daylight.
A lot.
They're brave.
I don't know if you want to argue that maybe they could have found more creative ways to kind of to shield their from the bad CGI, but at the same time, I kind of applaud them from not shying away from showing the creature.
Yeah.
And like I said, I mean, the effects didn't really take me out of the movie. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of scenes where it looks very 2D and it has that very CGI glossy look to it. Some of the night shots, I think, look pretty good, actually. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, it just depends on the shot. I will say where I think that they, a little ill-advised maybe, was having the scene in the broad daylight at the end where they set it on fire. That looked pretty rough. And that kind of, you know, maybe was a little distracting. But other than that, I mean,
it was all right.
It was pretty good.
I mean, that's really the only effects in the movie. Yeah. A whole lot is mostly the just monster. That.
Score. I mean, the score is all right. I mean, I don't know that it really stands out in any major way. But I think it complements this movie really well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, yeah. But, yeah, so.
I mean, some of it's like random, like, classical music.
Yeah.
And some of it's, like, music that doesn't, you know, you feel like maybe wouldn't fit this movie, but, I mean, it just works for the kind of movie that it is.
Yeah, it works. Yeah,
it works.
I like it.
I like this movie.
Are we ready to get into final thoughts?
I guess so.
All right, Andrew, why don't you start us off?
Well.
Well, I thought this was a pretty good movie. Had a lot of good character stuff going on, better than most movies we've watched this year. Animation's a little rough, but I can forgive him for that. I think I'm going to give this movie an A+.
A happy moment.
What about you, Dylan?
Yeah, I'm pretty much on the same page as Andrew. This movie is actually probably one of the best, if not the best movie that we've watched so far. Some of the only ones I think I could maybe put above it is maybe the original, and I think I gave another one, like, I think I gave Mothra a pretty high grade. But overall, I mean, it's a very well-written movie, and it's nice to see a more modern movie for the first time in a while. I think this is probably the first fairly modern movie we've watched, actually, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it is, except for Godzilla King of the Monsters. Yeah,
that didn't count. That was the first movie we did. But, yeah, I mean, not that I don't like older movies, but it's nice to kind of see something a little more modern, something, you know, in color.
In color. We've been watching a lot of movies in color.
We have been watching a lot of movies in color. Technicolor. Good color. But overall, I mean, the story is very, very well written for a 2006 Korean movie, which I've not seen any more Korean movies, but
you're gonna watch a North Korean movie in a couple of weeks. It's got a really interesting backstory.
No. Anyway, characters are really well written, really well fleshed out, and I like that each one, like you said, has, you know, their kind of their own individual like story or like subplot that gets, you know, has some sort of closure in the end, which is really nice. The creature looks pretty cool. I mean, it doesn't bother me. I kind of like it. He looks weird. The CGI on him is rough. But it is what it is, I guess, for 2006 South Korea and one production company doing the whole movie. Like you said, I mean, I got to give them credit for having the guts to do a lot of these shots with this creature in broad daylight, which is pretty cool because even you know, most modern movies nowadays don't even like to do that.
Yeah, watch like Jurassic Park.
They're like, put it at night.
Put it at night in the rain.
In the rain. Mm-hmm. In small confined space.
Yeah.
But overall, yeah, no, pretty good. The score is interesting for the movie that this is. I think it works well for the movie that it's in. Overall, I enjoyed it quite a bit. I'll give it an A+.
A happy moment.
I'll give it an A+.
Well, like we've talked about, like all the stuff y'all said, I really enjoyed this movie. I didn't even talk about the thing that I appreciated most about this movie is that they had the guts to kill the little girl at the end.
Savage.
She died. Wow. And then it's really moving. He adopts the little boy. Because there's like these two homeless boys, like the really sad subplot running around this whole movie, stealing food when they can, and they're always worried about food. So at the end of the movie, he adopts him and says he can, the girl promises him that if they get out of the sewer, they can eat as much as they want from her grandfather's little shop. And so at the end of the movie, the dad adopts him and lets him eat as much as he wants from the little shop. And it's really sad. And it's a really nice final shot, like in the snow in that little shack. But anyway, I think the acting, we didn't really talk about the acting itself very much. I think the acting is really good. I think everyone is committed to their performance and does a really good job.
Yeah, no, the acting is really good in this movie too.
Like we said, Creature, I appreciate the design. I appreciate that they had the guts to show it in broad daylight. You know, maybe you could argue they could have found more creative ways to kind of shield their dodgy effects at times, but I'm not really going to blame them for that. Really, really well-written movie. Really well-written movie overall. Aside from maybe a couple of logic issues, but, you know, there's not very many movies we're going to watch for this podcast that aren't riddled with logic issues. And I like the characters are really well-written and everything. I'm going to give it an A.
All right.
An A. I'm going to lowball it. Give it an A. Oof. But a really solid A. So I think 2 A+ and an A is really good for a film on this podcast.
Yeah.
So,
And I don't know if we've discussed recently, but our ratings of these are based on in this specific space of movies. We're
grading everything on a curve. Now I would say this movie would still probably be a solid.
It's B+. It's a solid probably B+ if you were comparing it to like the great movies out there.
Yeah.
Some of the best movies ever made.
Yeah. But, yeah, we're grading on a curve compared to other monster movies that we're watching.
At the lowest, it's probably a B-.
I would still give it a B+. I mean, you know, dodgy effects aside, I think it stands out there with the most well-made Hollywood movies.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, I was going to take some time in our news section to talk about some things I got in the, not review the movies, but review the their releases. I got my Ultraman and Ultra Q Steelbooks in the mail.
Nobody cares.
I care.
I'm kidding. Apparently, I'm going to have to watch these at some point in time when these Ultraman movies come out.
The steelbooks are really nice. They look really nice. They come with this really lovely booklet that have, like, episode guides and monster bios and like character bios, all kinds of real. I really love the little booklets. And the transfers, me and Andrew just popped in an episode of Ultraman just to see what it looked like. We watched the, I forget what it's called, but the one with giraffes in it, the one that's the thinly veiled Godzilla creature. And the Blu-ray transfer is pretty good. They did a pretty good job with that. The one thing I do not like, and I know this is with all steelbooks that have a lot of discs like this, is they stack the discs and they're really, like the thing in the middle that they're, it's really firm because it's a new thing. And I feel like I'm going to break the disc in half every time I try to take it off, the top disc off.
Yeah. Any disc off?
Any disc off. And so, yeah, that stresses me out. But, I mean, like I said, it's a steel book, so it's hard to, like, you know, divide them up into separate little plastic things or whatever. So, but overall, I'll give that release a really solid recommend. If you're into Ultraman, I think you should go out and get it. I also got Rego and Rega from SRS Cinema.
No.
Me and Andrew have watched both of them.
No.
I have added them to the schedule.
No.
To the end of our schedule, so it'll be a while till we get to them. I know a lot of really dedicated genre fans are big on these movies.
Are they connected?
They are related, yes. They are. Rega is a sequel, pseudo-sequel to Rego, I guess. They are lovingly called independently made monster films. I would classify them closer to glorified fan films.
No.
But we will watch them and review them.
No, we will.
Blu-rays themselves, I mean, you know, they're just your typical little, they come in your typical little Blu-ray case. And, I mean, they got, I think each of them have, like, a making of documentary on them and, you know, the original trailers and stuff. So the extra features are good enough for, you know, especially considering what these are. The Blu-ray chancellors are fine. I'm not going to say they're excellent, but then again, these probably weren't filmed with the greatest of cameras, so I'm not going to ding them for that too bad. But, yeah, I got those. So, I'd say they're, if you're looking at buying them, they're only for the most dedicated of fans. They're not for everybody. I'm sorry, Dylan, that you're going to have to watch them.
I'd like to quit before then.
just know what you're getting into. But anyway.
Trash?
You know what? I'm going to say this for basically, like I said, for basically a glorified fan film, he did have a small crew working on them. But not bad. Especially Rego. Not bad.
Trash.
Trash. Rego was a little more out there, yeah.
Trash.
I also ordered off Amazon Pulgasari.
That's a release.
It's
I could have made that at home.
Yeah, I'm going to say it's probably essentially a bootleg. I have not popped it in and watched it yet because we're going to watch it for this podcast. So I'm assuming it's just a bootleg. But at least they put it in a nice little box. I don't know. Nice little, well, it's just your typical DVD box. At least it looks nice. They even like took the time to put a print cover on the DVD, and it's not just a blank silver DVD. It's a bootleg because North Korea doesn't release their media.
No,
watch it and see it. We'll see how it looks. Anything else we want to talk about while we're on it? Again, I apologize for missing last week. We'll try to not have that happen too often.
Suck it up.
That's for right. Our next episode, we will watch Godzilla's Revenge or All Monsters Attack.
No,
depending on what title you go out.
No,
go by.
No, no.
Dylan's not gonna like that one either.
No,
but
it's not the best.
It's only 70 minutes long, so
oh, okay. At least it's short.
But anyway, so yeah, don't forget to join us next week for Godzilla's Revenge. As always, I'm Aaron.
I'm Andrew.
And I'm Dylan. And we'll catch you in the next one.